In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence. Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Moe.
And this is Dallin. Welcome on in, folks. It's good to be here, Mitch. We're feeling good going into this podcast.
It is Wednesday, my dude.
It is. That's a great point. We normally record this on Tuesday, but last night, my wife and I enjoyed a Jazz game. First Jazz game of the year for us. I guess it's only like their second game, but great atmosphere at Vivint Arena. Jazz got the win over the Nuggets, so we pushed this back to Wednesday, October 27th, and it is Wednesday, my dudes. Probably not for you as you're listening to this, but hey, that's where we're at, Mitch, and we've got some fun stuff in store today.
Oh yeah, tons of it. We got some news. We got some news we're gonna go over. We got some NFL stuff. We got college football. We got MLB postseason. We got quick picks. We got it all here today, folks. We got it all.
Absolutely.
Buckle up.
Yes.
Buckle up.
Safety first. All right. On the Sports Hour. That's when you get the disclaimer, it says, please keep your hands and feet inside the vehicle at all times. Eat some snacks, hydrate. We've talked about that before. Make sure you're taking care of your body.
Grab your popcorn, grab a little water, make sure you're hydrated.
Some nuts, some fruit, whatever floats your boat. And let's just jump right in, Mitch. So as you mentioned, we've got to start with some news.
That's right. Let's get into the news. I feel like it's a little played out now. We got to come up with something new.
You think so?
I think it is.
It's old hat. People are tired of it.
I mean, dude, we're in the 20s now. It's time for change.
We're in the 20s. That is true. We did start this podcast in the teens. Now it is the 20s. Is that what we're calling this decade, the 20s? It feels weird. I know you're right. I know it's right. I know it's the 2020s. So, yeah, I guess that is correct. But it just feels weird.
It does, because like when you think we think about the 20s, the 1920s, but
right.
Like now it's our generation's 20s. It's time to I think we should start addressing this as the 20s. And it sounds cooler. Like think about it like when you're in 2035 and you're like, back in the 20s.
Back in the 20s. Like back in my 20s,
That sounds cool. It just sounds cool.
I guess so. Well, it is the 20s. Folks, and it's 2021 to be exact, and I guess in like 2 months it'll be 2022. How is that, Mitch? Speaking of that, I mean, we haven't gotten to the news yet. This is not the news, guys. It is not news that the year is almost over. Maybe it is to you if you haven't been paying attention, but it just feels like this is all flown by already, and here we are.
It's gone by so quick. I mean, this year flew by.
Crazy. What are you gonna be for Halloween? We got Halloween on Sunday, Mitch. What are you gonna dress up as?
I have a Matt Chapman jersey.
Okay.
So I was thinking about being Fat Chapman.
Okay.
Fair enough. I also have my fire suit from when I drove a race car there for a little bit.
Okay. Right.
And it's probably the easiest cop out ever, just to be a race car driver.
Just be a race car driver. I mean, that's deep down, anyways. So
I know when I become a, because I still have dreams one day of becoming a. Country music star and professional race car driver.
Right.
So,
and I want to perform Coachella on the moon,
Yeah. So. And I think I cop out when I dress up and just say, I'll put on the fire suit and be a race car driver.
There you go. That's nice.
You gonna play anything with Caitlin? Or
no, absolutely not.
No,
I'm very anti. I don't know. I've never been. And I've said, once we have kids, absolutely dress me up. It'll be a ton of fun. But until then, it's just, I've got, so she's going to a bunch of parties on Saturday night, but unfortunately I'm going to be at the BYU game. BYU, Virginia this weekend. The return of Bronco Mendenhall to Provo. It'll be a fun time, but it's an 8:15 kick. So, ooh, dang it, man. I'm just going to have to miss out on all those things. It's a real bummer. It's, yeah, I'm absolutely devastated.
I mean, I've never been a Halloween guy. Our Halloween tradition, our families, that's when we watch the first Christmas movie of the year. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, we'll hand out candy at the kids and everything, and that's always fun to see, especially see the little ones come up in their cute costumes or whatever. Right. But
just fuck Thanksgiving, huh? You know, you're just nobody cares about you. We're not
you name a Thanksgiving movie to me. You name a Thanksgiving movie.
Thanksgiving movie, Mitch.
Other than Charlie Brown, name me a Thanksgiving movie. That's a good question.
I cannot. That's a genre that's untapped. Hallmark, what are you doing? Hallmark is just only doing Christmas. Start expanding just a couple weeks early, baby.
I take that back.
A lot of those movies start at Thanksgiving, though, right? Like, they start at Thanksgiving, and then they get into Christmas, but I don't know.
I think I take that back, though. There's got to be a Madea. That's the Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a Madea for everything.
Yes.
So,
there's got to be.
All right, Mitch, shall we talk about news here?
Let's get into it.
All this conversation to start off, we're going to talk about Deshaun Watson. Trade deadline upcoming here next week. And right now, you know, November 2nd is the deadline. The Panthers have officially backed out. Last week, I don't know if we discussed this last week, but the rumor sort of picked up in the last week before the weekend's games, just that, you know, the interest was going to be there, that Miami was the main interest, that Houston wanted to move him before the deadline, but not much else. The Panthers, a disappointing loss, a bad loss to the Giants on Sunday. And all of a sudden, immediately after the game, reports are the Panthers are going to look into this Watson thing. Ultimately, today, reports come out Wednesday that they're not going to pursue a trade at this time. They wanted closure on, you know, the legal situation, but they also reportedly wanted to talk to him face to face and just get an idea for the guy himself and where he stands and all this and what he has to say for himself. Not able to get that done before the trade deadline. So they've officially backed out Watson. It seems like the only clear target right now is Miami. He does have a no trade clause, Mitch. And the report is that Watson has only waived his trade, no trade clause for the Dolphins so far. So we'll see if a trade can get done in the next week for Deshaun Watson. But interesting to me that the Panthers sort of looked into it, ultimately backed out. I'll get your thoughts. I have, some thoughts on this as a Panthers fan. But what's your take on this situation? And ultimately, I guess this coming down to Miami's, interest in making a move.
Yeah, I mean, this was a team that, going back to before the season started in the off season, they went back and, you know, Miami is one of the teams that was at the forefront of being Deshaun Watson. There was the Tua trade and everything that was discussed and rumored. Now it's kind of starting to come to light. Miami has made it very clear that they only want to execute this trade if all the off the field legal issues have been resolved. So the only way that could happen is prior to November 2nd. All 22 civil suits would have to be resolved. But Watson doesn't want to settle because that would be essentially an admission of guilt. So he doesn't want to do that. So I don't see anything happening. I mean, I think it's going to be a rumor. And I think that's going to be, maybe down to the wire as far as news goes and us gathering information about this. But I don't see anything happening just because there hasn't been a whole lot of progression through all these civil suits anyway. But on the football side of things, Miami has an issue. I don't think Tua is the guy. I don't think Tua is the guy. I think Deshaun Watson's a much more talented guy. It would make sense for them to go pursue a more established quarterback if they feel like they're in the position to win now. Now, they're a one-win team right now. So are they in the position to go win now? I don't think so. So the trade itself doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, but we know how bad that Deshaun Watson wants out of Houston. Makes sense that he waived the trade clause to go to Miami. I think that's probably the only suitor at this moment that makes any sort of sense, because anywhere else just really wouldn't. But interesting that the Panthers sat him down as well and kind of gave him a talk to him and figured out what kind of guy he was with them having Sam Darnold under center.
Well, no, they didn't. So that was one of their things, is they wanted to be able to talk to Watson. And not being able to made them not want to make the trade, which is like very smart if you think about it, right? I mean, here's a guy accused of, certain things that, like, listen, like, you know, whether he faces any charges for that or not, you want to know, like, where's this guy at? You know, how is he holding himself accountable for, you know, any sort of actions that he has? You know, what kind of leader is he going to be for you? You know, interesting this week on Tuesday, Roger Goodell from the annual fall league meeting said that they do not feel that they have the necessary information at this point to place Watson on the commissioner's exempt list. So if Houston decided to play him, which they obviously would not, he doesn't want to play for the Texans anymore. But if Miami were to trade for him, or anybody else for that matter, he should be able to play like tomorrow. And it seems like the NFL is not going to do anything until more comes out from this investigation. So does that entice Miami to actually make that move, knowing that they could actually, you know, get him on the field immediately? Who knows? Ultimately, if this case comes down in 2 weeks and says that charges are being brought and now he's on the exempt list, well, then you just wasted all that draft capital. Is Houston willing to lower the price before the deadline comes around just to get the burden out of the building, a guy who doesn't want to be there, recoup what you can and move on? If they lower the price, does Miami just say, you know what, screw it, we got to go, we just got to do it and see how it plays out? I don't know. I think it's interesting from the Deshaun Watson standpoint, Mitch, but I also think it's fascinating for Tua, who would then be on the move. And we've talked about some of those destinations, potentially Washington, Denver, maybe Carolina. They were exploring the quarterback market. Does that feel like a guy they want to go after? I mean, it could be intriguing who decides to go after Tua if he did become available with this Deshaun Watson move.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
I mean, we'll see again a week until the trade deadline. So time, will tell how this plays out. Ultimately, it's, just sort of wait and see at this point, but seems like it's narrowed down to just the Miami Dolphins. And I guess maybe a surprise team coming out of left field, perhaps the Broncos, somebody like that. Mitch, this isn't as much news as I thought. It was kind of funny. So we talked about head coach openings last week, USC. There were some reports on some of the names being floated out there as potential candidates, right? James Franklin from Penn State is kind of emerging as likely one of the main candidates, which we had mentioned before when Clay Helton had been fired. Mike Tomlin, that Mike Tomlin, the Pittsburgh Steelers head coach, he was mentioned as a potential candidate for the USC college football head coach job. And he was asked about it this week, and Tomlin had some pretty strong words about his interest and the possibility of him moving to back to college football. He vehemently denied it and was basically like, why are you asking me such a stupid question? Like, I'm not going anywhere. Just kind of funny to see how different guys handle it. You know, James Franklin was pretty coy about the whole situation. We could have done more. I felt like Mike Tomlin is just like, absolutely not, basically.
Yeah. I mean, his quote was never say never, but never. There's not a booster with a big enough blank check. I mean, could you be any more clear that, right? No, I am not going to coach at USC. And why would he?
Of course.
Since taking over the Steelers, he has built an empire over there. I mean, they're having the down year right now, but he's been one of the most successful coaches in NFL history.
He's won a Super Bowl.
He's got a Super Bowl. He is the head of one of the marquee franchises in the entire NFL.
Still very young.
I mean, yeah, he's only what, in his 40s?
Yeah, I mean, so, like, he was one of the youngest head coaches when he got his job, you know, with the Steelers a decade or so ago. So, I mean, yeah, he's still got to be in his late 40s, maybe early 50s at the most. But, I mean, that's still very young.
This has the potential to be Pittsburgh's next Chuck Knoll, the next longtime coach that just stays around forever and has continued success. There's no reason he would ever leave Pittsburgh for USC. No reason.
No way. And it's, you know, it's funny to see his reaction to this, because it makes it really obvious that, okay, this was a USC source throwing some extra names out there to just sort of bring the attention again, or maybe just out of like, you know, the fool's chance that like Tomlin hears that and was like, well, I do love LA, you know, I don't like, I don't know, like, that clearly wasn't legitimate. That clearly wasn't legitimate interest. It seems like his name was just sort of thrown in with the rest to sort of like be like, hey, also don't, you know, maybe this guy, maybe this intriguing name, you know, but
he doesn't strike me as an LA guy. This is a Pittsburgh guy.
I mean, he's been in Pittsburgh for a decade. What is he?
This is a dirt under. This is a dirt under your nails and fight for every win type of guy. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about the NFL at this point. If you could be at the top of the NFL, there's no better place to be in football. You know, so Mitch, keep it in the football world. But actually, some college football, we've talked at length this season on the college football realignment as conference expansion occurs and teams sort of move around. The latest domino was the AAC poaching six teams from Conference USA. And this week, you know, more poaching on the horizon for Conference USA. Two teams have joined the Sun Belt, Mitch. Southern Miss and Old Dominion. Both teams are expected to join no later than July 1st, 2023. That brings the total members for now at 14. The other reported teams expected to get invitations and join: Marshall from Conference USA and James Madison, the FCS powerhouse from Virginia. So, Mitch, we're looking at a Sun Belt that's going to expand to 16 teams right now, 14 officially, but likely 16. Conference USA, I believe, will be down to 4 or 5 teams, essentially rendering them like
independence.
I mean, they'll have to either bring in FCS teams, you know, expand, you know, add FCS teams, or call some independents. Liberty seems content to be independent at this time, but New Mexico State, UConn, UMass, I mean, those are gross, but that's it. I mean, Conference USA can't exist with 5 teams, Mitch. The Sun Belt making this move is very interesting to me. Will they ultimately absorb the rest of, you know, the Conference USA that makes sense? Will the MAC, you know, go after the Western Kentuckys of the world, perhaps, you know, who sort of fit in their geographic area? You know, what happens to those remaining teams is fascinating, but the Sun Belt making a power move. Marshall or Southern Miss, Old Dominion officially on board, Marshall and James Madison expected.
Yeah. I mean, Conference USA is either going to dissolve or like what you said, they have to call some FCS teams in here. And I mean, the big ones that come to mind are South Dakota, North Dakota, but like we had talked about last week, the markets. You know, what kind of markets are they in? If they really want this conference to survive, I don't think you really need to care about the markets.
Yeah, at this point, it doesn't matter for the Conference USA if it's about survival.
Right. So, you know, I think that, I mean, quite honestly, I think this is the death of Conference USA.
It very well may be, Mitch. I mean, right now, you're looking at, you know, Middle Tennessee, Western Kentucky, Louisiana Tech, UTEP, and Florida International.
That's weak.
That's it. Weak. I mean, and that's it. And Marshall, that's assuming Marshall does officially join the Sun Belt as they are expected to. Old Dominion, Southern Miss moving on. So yeah, that's 5 teams. 2 of those teams, by the way, UTEP, Florida International, very far away from each other and everybody else in the conference, right? Like, I mean, this is geographically doesn't make any sense. 5 teams is not nearly enough to have a conference. So, you know, can UTEP jump over to the Mountain West? Perhaps does Florida Atlantic end up somewhere, you know, like the Sun Belt perhaps, or, you know, what happens to those other teams? We'll find out, but yet another domino in conference realignment. And like you said, it might spell the end of the Conference USA.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. Mitch, the final bit of news here, we got to do our weekly update on the Seattle Kraken.
Release the Kraken.
Yeah, Kraken getting their first home win.
Win in Climate Pledge Arena. You love to see it.
Love to see it. 5 win over the Montreal Canadiens. 2-4 on the year. They got seven. Like, how do we even say this? Playoff points?
Seven points. Yeah, 7 points on the season with the
All right, no, sorry, they have and a five play, points.
Five points, yeah. Two wins and the overtime loss.
Right. Hey, we're not last. We're not last. I mean, expansion, very difficult to overcome. Obviously, you know, there have been exceptions to that rule, like we saw with the Golden Knights just a few years ago in the NHL. And across any sport, expansion is hard to overcome and be, you know, competitive right off the bat. But, hey, we're better than teams like the Anaheim Ducks, the LA Kings, the Golden Knights. You know, hey, so far so good.
Don't sleep on the Kraken, baby. Don't sleep on the Kraken. You know, right now, the lead man, the guy scoring the goals, Brandon Tanev, our guy, number 13, the guy with the wacky picture on ESPN. Go look him up. Tanev, 5 goals to lead the team so far in the season. He had 2 in the match against the Canadians, the win the other night, 2 goals in that game, 5 on the season so far. So, you know, I having watched a handful of games from this team so far this season, Mitch, I will say, you know, I'm pretty intrigued. It seems like they play pretty well. You know, they've got strong goalies. It's just a matter of who's going to emerge as those guys, you know, scoring goals. But it's fun to watch. The crowd was into it. I watched the season opener against the Canucks, and man, crowd was into it. I loved that. Seeing Seattle legends like Sean Kemp, Gary Payton at the game, you know, Sue Bird for the Seattle Storm. So it's great. It's a good time. And hopefully just more dubs for the Kraken moving forward.
I love that Philip Grubauer guy.
Yes.
In between the poles. Guy's a stonewall.
Absolutely. And what's the other guy? Giordano? Giordano. He's a defensive guy.
Mark Giordano.
You can just tell that guy has like that leadership. Like he seems like he knows what he's doing. Just kind of a glue guy on the team. So, you know, you like to see that. If you're starting to emerge, you're seeing some players, you know, on this squad.
We need a good goon, though. We need a good goon that just goes out there and beats the hell out of people.
Absolutely. So fun stuff here. You know, the Seattle Kraken official podcast here, the Sports Hour. So we always have to mention our guys. Mitch, let's jump into the NFL week 7 in the books. And, you know, we didn't do week 1 overreactions. We didn't do week 1 overreactions. We have before, but you know, we didn't do it this year. We didn't want to overreact. I think it's time to overreact though, because we're 6 or 7 games into the season, depending on if you've had a bye or not. And it feels like we're starting to really kind of have an idea for certain teams and where they're at and you know, how it's going to look moving forward. And so it feels like the right time to start kind of cementing some takes and sort of get some overreactions out there. So we have a handful each that we're going to go through. I'll let you start wherever you want here. What's your first overreaction from this season so far as we enter week 8 of the NFL?
Well, let's go to this Bengals-Ravens game just very quick. Bengals absolutely blow out the Ravens 41-17. I mean, not even close. Joe Burrow lights him up for 416-3. Jamar Chase, 8-201 and a touchdown. The defense was fantastic against this dynamic Ravens offense that at times can absolutely blow you away with the run game. Bengals are now 5-2. They are leading this division. The Bengals are going to win the AFC North. And I don't think that's that crazy to say.
I love it, Mitch. Point. I love it.
Look, what this start does, because now I'm thinking, okay, Bengals can at least win 10 games. I think the Bengals can win 10 games. They go 5-5 the rest of the year, they win 10 games. All they got to do is go 500. And they win 10 games. I think this is probably an 11-win team. And they get into the playoffs. This takes Zach Taylor off the hot seat. Joe Burrow has been playing behind a offensive line that at times has looked good, but is generally still pretty porous at the moment and has been taking hits, still making the throws. And he is the toughest quarterback in the entire NFL. This guy is just flat out getting it done. They have Joe Mixon still in the backfield. They have a defense that's way better than I thought it was going to be. There's no reason that the Bengals shouldn't win the AFC North other than the fact that they go 500 and the Ravens, for some reason, go, you know, 8-1 or 8-2 the rest of the year. I'm throwing the Browns out as division winners. I'm not high on the Browns, but anymore. But the Bengals, they should be competing for this AFC North, and I think they could win it.
I like it, Mitch. I love that. You know, listen, I don't agree with you, but I love the overreaction. A part of that is I had Baltimore going to the Super Bowl this season, and I still feel pretty strongly about that, despite this game. And an impressive win for the Bengals, no doubt. 2-0 against the AFC North to start this season with wins over the Steelers and the Ravens, both on the road. So, that, hey, I mean, not a bad way to start this off for the Bengals. They're going to have the Jets this weekend, so favorable matchup here, but it will be a tough stretch if you look at the rest of their schedule, Mitch, most notably the last three games versus the Ravens, the Chiefs, and then at the Browns in that final week. So, you know, they're going to have their test, no doubt. Four games against the AFC West remaining for the Browns, which the AFC West, very strong division. So it's not going to be easy sledding for the Bengals, but they've done what they needed to do to start this season 5-2. That offense is rolling. Joe Burrow looks in command, in control. And Ja'Marr Chase is a hell of a weapon that they've given him. So, you know, I think this Bengals is definitely in a position to be a playoff team. I would definitely agree with that. I believe the Ravens are going to win the division still. But I love it. And there's reason to believe in this Bengals team right now.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely.
All right. I've got one here, Mitch. I'm going to talk about the MVP. Right okay. Now, for the MVP, you're going to hear names like Tom Brady. You heard of that guy? I don't know.
Yeah.
Played at Michigan, I think.
Rings a bell.
Yeah, so, something like that. He's pretty good. Kyler Murray has the cards off to a 7-0 start. Red hot. You're going to hear his name. A guy you're not going to hear, and the guy who's going to win the MVP this season, Mitch, Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott has these Cowboys playing real well, Mitch. Playing real well right now. Only one loss on the season for the Cowboys. Well in control of the NFC East. And he's playing at a really high level. And I think when push comes to shove at the end of the season, when the rest of the conference has dueled for their respective division titles, the AFC East has to battle it out. Kyler, Stafford back and forth. Tom Brady trying to fight off the NFC South. Aaron Rodgers with the NFC North. I think Dak Prescott's going to be able to cruise right through the NFC East. We know it's weak. I mean, all the other three teams are 2-5 to start this season. Not good. Dak's playing at a high level, and I think by the end of the season, Cowboys might have the best record in the NFC. If there are 2-3 losses and that's it, and Dak's keeping up on the pace that he's at right now, I think he's going to be well in the conversation for MVP, Mitch. He's the sixth highest graded quarterback in passing grade on PFF behind Brady, Murray, Derek Carr, Russell Wilson, and Kirk Cousins. 87.7 passing grade for Dak Prescott. He is eighth in passing yards. With one less game played, by the way, only six games for the Cowboys, 1,800 yards, 16 touchdowns, four picks, 73% completion percentage, Mitch. So he's got the touchdowns, he's got the yards, he completes the ball at a very high level, and his team's winning. So I don't know. I think there's a, like I said, Kyler Murray, Tom Brady, you're going to hear those names. Those should be guys we're talking about right now, but I think when it's all said and done, it might be Dak Prescott as the guy standing there at the end of the season.
I mean, if they're the number one seed at the end of the year, a winning team with a quarterback putting up those type of numbers, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that he's still going to get shade, though. I think he's going to get shade over, you know, the sexier pick, which would probably be right now Kyler Murray.
Sure.
I think he's going to get some shade over that, and I think he's going to get overlooked. But yeah, there's no reason why he shouldn't right now. 16 touchdowns, 16-4 interception, which reduce it down, simple math, 4-1 touchdown to interception ratio.
Right.
Guys,
he's averaging 300 yards a game, passing yards a game, 300 passing yards a game, and four touchdowns. I mean,
and that's and that's consistent with what we saw last year before he got hurt.
Exactly.
Puts him now in the conversation for comeback player of the year. Can he win MVP and comeback player of the year in the same year? Dak might do it. So, you know, I'm on board with you.
Okay.
I like it.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. What's your what's your next overreaction here?
So this one pains me to say it because I've been such a stan for Baker Mayfield.
Mm.
And the Browns.
I don't like where this is going.
I was excited about the Browns. I was really excited about the Browns. Browns aren't playing good football right now. Okay. They're playing really kind of middle of the road football. They win ugly, which is a byproduct of the way that their game planning goes. Usually, you know, run the football hard, play good defense. You're not going to win in these flashy fashions. Right. Baker's right now in the last year of his rookie contract. This is year 5 for him. So it's up. He has the
extension.
Didn't get the extension, so he can exercise the free agency market. I don't know if Baker is the starter in Cleveland next year. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to be a backup in Cleveland, but he may be a starter somewhere else. But let's say he does get a short-term extension, a 2-year deal, and Cleveland goes out and drafts Kenny Pickett from Pitt. You know, and he's got to compete with Kenny Pickett now, or he's got to, you know, compete with someone coming out of the draft. Baker hasn't, you know, he's done, I think, everything that he can with that franchise. He's willed that team to a lot of wins. I don't know if he's the answer for the Browns. And it sure seemed like he was last year, but I don't know right now with the health issues and you know, the inconsistencies when he doesn't have his weapons on the field. He's not really able to get it done when he doesn't have his guys on the field. Is he really the guy to take you to the promised land? I don't know if Baker's that guy anymore. So I don't know if he's the starter in Cleveland after this year.
You know, Mitch, I like this one. I don't like it for Baker Mayfield, but I like this take because the Browns are going to be at a crossroads this offseason. And they kind of were already last offseason, but I felt like they couldn't make a decision. And ultimately they didn't in extending Baker or not, because you'd seen a couple okay seasons from Baker with some coaching turnover. Last year, things click with Stefanski. They're a playoff team. It looks good. He faded down the stretch. It was some tough games down the stretch for them. And yes, you know, they got a win in the playoffs. That matters. You know, great season for Baker. But you'd only seen one. Hard to invest the future with the price it was going to take in Baker Mayfield when you'd only seen that one successful season. So this year was going to have to be, okay, Baker, prove you're worth the money. Prove you're the guy. And he hasn't done it so far. Like, yes, they're 4-3, but they're 3-3 in his starts. He didn't start in week 7. He, like, as you mentioned, he's played okay, but not great. I think it's clear in 4 years, 5 years of Baker Mayfield that he has a clear ceiling as a player. He's a good player. He's a good quarterback. I think he can be a winning quarterback on a winning team. But you need quite a bit around him, and you need things to go right. I mean, think of the playoff quarterbacks, the Super Bowl quarterbacks of the past, the Jimmy Garoppolos, the Jared Goffs, those types of guys where you had the right team around him. He could take them all the way. He could create success, but you needed things around him. That's not a guy who's elevating the team the way a Mahomes or a Tom Brady or an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson does for your team. So every team wants to find that guy. If you're going to invest in the quarterback position, get you one of those guys. If the Browns have decided that's not their guy, he's not going to be one of those guys, well, then you're right, Mitch. They probably should go find that guy because they have the type of roster that could win a Super Bowl. And if the only thing holding them back is Baker Mayfield being the caliber quarterback they need, well, then, yeah, they should go find that guy, whether it is, you know, resetting in the draft, which feels more unlikely. What seems more likely to me, Mitch, is going after a big time name who potentially becomes available Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, a veteran who's going to look around the league and say, where are they going to go? They're going to want to go to a place where they can win. And listen, Cleveland's not the most exciting destination, all right? It's not the Dolphins. It's not Tampa Bay, okay? Brady wanted to go for nice weather. You're not going to get that in Cleveland, but you're going to get the best roster in the NFL. So the Browns are in an interesting point, and we'll see how the rest of the season plays out. If Baker can really elevate his game, then sure, maybe he's given himself that opportunity. But I'm with you. It seems like what we've seen so far, the injuries that he's struggled with, and just the overall, you know, ceiling we've seen, this might be the opportunity for the Browns to move on and try to find that guy.
Which is so disheartening, because you had so much hope for Baker Mayfield in Cleveland, but you really are at a crossroads now. Like, you have to make a decision, Baker or someone else. And what decision they make there is up in the air. No one really knows what they're going to do. But yeah, the decision needs to be made this offseason. And there's a good possibility that Baker's not part of that, you know, not part of the team coming next year. So
a lot of games left in this season. And of course, you know, if they make the playoffs, how far they go, all of that will matter when it comes down to making this decision. But I think you're right in looking ahead at this and talking about this because of where the team is at in their team building phase. And so, yeah, I'm right there with you. And you know, it's similar too to what the Dolphins are discussing with Tua right now. You know, Tua might be a great quarterback in the NFL, but if the Dolphins feel like their timeline needs a guy who can do it right now and Tua's not that guy, well, then they're going to try to go find that guy, you know, and Cleveland might find themselves in a similar boat. Mitch, I got one for you.
Okay.
One of the biggest surprises this year has been the Las Vegas Raiders, 5-2 start. Probably been the team this year, the biggest story, right? With their hot start and then the departure of John Gruden and, you know, sort of the aftermath of all this. They've been a team at the top of the news for the NFL. 5-2 to start this season. They've rallied since the departure of their head coach. Right now, they're top of the AFC West, but despite all this, Mitch, I think the Raiders are going to miss the playoffs. Mm. The AFC is strong. And, you know, not a lot of teams have really emerged. We discussed last week who was the best team in the NFL. Bills, Ravens. The Ravens then go get beat by the Bengals. Right now, the Bengals and the Raiders are tied with the best record, and so are the Titans. It's just a weird mess right now. The Chiefs aren't who we thought they were, I guess. Nobody's emerged, but what has emerged is that there's quite a few pretty good teams. And when it comes down to the end of the season, there's going to be quite a few teams fighting for a wild card spot. The AFC North, as we've discussed already, Bengals, Ravens, Browns, all those teams, I believe, are going to be there. Chiefs, Raiders, Chargers are all going to be there. Not all those teams can make it. So who's going to be left out on the outside? I'm going with the Raiders, Mitch. Despite how good it's looked, despite the hot start and sort of overcoming adversity, I think there's some inherent flaws with this team it's going to be a struggle for them down the stretch. They also have tough schedule. Chiefs twice still on the schedule. One more game against the Chargers, at the Browns versus the Bengals, at the Cowboys. All those tough, tough games. And ultimately, this team offensively can only do one thing, which is pass the ball. They cannot run the ball. Josh Jacobs, you know, draft him in the first round. Kenyon Drake, sign him for all this money. They can't run the ball, though. Their offensive line is not good, and they can't run the ball. And it's forcing them to be one-dimensional. Once teams figure out how to force them to be one-dimensional, just sit back and make Derek Carr dink and dunk them to death to win, I think it's going to be hard for the Raiders to come by wins, and it's not going to be as explosive as it was early in this season. So despite the hot start, despite the great story, and listen, it has been a great story for Vegas. I had them as a borderline playoff team going into the season. I think I had them in the wild card as a 7 seed. I think they missed the playoffs, though. I don't think it's going to be a tough ending to what has been a very up and down year so far.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, like you just mentioned, the tough schedule. There's definitely a path for them not to get to the playoffs. I am going to continue to believe in the Raiders, though. I think that John Gruden was a distraction. I feel that there was some flaws in the way that he the way he ran his system. And and Rich Bisaccia, by the way, has done a great job of really opening things up. They simplified the playbook down a ton to really just, you know, really open up and get the best out of their own players. I think that this is still a playoff team. I still think that they get in. And like you mentioned a ton of other great teams like the Chargers and the Chiefs, especially just in that division alone, that could get in. And that's going to be a serious competition for them. But I'm not giving up on the Raiders yet. I'm not giving up on the Raiders. I think that they'll get in as a wild card. I don't think they'll win the division, but they'll sneak in as a wild card, I think. And this will still be a really competitive team. Flaws aside.
Sure. No doubt. And, listen, they definitely have rallied since Gruden's departure, two wins. But those two wins did come against the Broncos and the Eagles, who are not very good teams. So they're on a bye right now. They're going to get the Giants, but then Chiefs, Bengals, Cowboys, three straight weeks. That'll be a good test. See where this Raiders team is at. Mitch, your final sort of overreaction here.
So this one's spicy.
We love that.
Derrick Henry. He could break his leg, have a career ending, have his leg amputated. It was broken so bad. And he would still be a Hall of Famer right now.
Oh, okay. So never plays another down. He's in the Hall of Fame.
I think that there are plenty of players in the NFL that have had four year stretches of dominance and then crap on the other ends of them. And they get into the Hall of Fame. I just want to list off Derrick Henry's last 3 years before this last year. So he was a 1,000-yard rusher in 2018 with 12 touchdowns, 1,500-yard rusher in 2019 with 16 touchdowns, 2,000-yard rusher in 2020 with 17 touchdowns. Right now, he is already approaching 1,000 yards at 869 and 10 touchdowns. Over the last over the last six games, he has had five games of over 100 yards, and three of those games he had three touchdowns. The guy is a man among boys. And I think when you look at, if his career were to end today, and I hope it doesn't, I hope he has a very long, healthy career with no injury issues whatsoever. But if it were to end today, the guy has had such a stretch of dominance. And I mean, and not just dominance. I mean, I don't know if there's a word past dominance that you could actually use to describe what Derrick Henry has been doing on the ground in the NFL, but he's that word. And Derrick Henry is by far in a way the best ground and pound guy in the NFL. He is this generation's Earl Campbell. And to me, I would get, if I'm a Hall of Fame voter, I'm giving him the Hall of Fame votes if his career ended today. No questions asked.
So you're basically saying he's like Megatron. Megatron, who, I mean, a couple years older, right? Derrick Henry, 27 right now, turns 28 January, beginning of January. So, come playoff time. Only six, seven years into his career. So you need
Calvin
a couple
Johnson
more years. But
running back. He is Calvin Johnson at the running back position.
Honestly, I think that's pretty fair, Mitch. And you talk about this dominant run that he's been on. And he's just very clearly been the best guy at his position for the last 2.5 years, right? Three, including this year. And if he got, maybe not right now, maybe I'm saying that's a little overreaction, which is fine, but maybe another year or so of this, finish out this season, and then another 1,500 yard season. If he has four 1,500 yard seasons in a row, four Pro Bowls, two All Pros, and then goes on to fade away in a couple years, absolutely, guy's a Hall of Famer, and he's clearly on that projection right now. And I love that you're thinking ahead.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, coming out of college, he had the kind of the question marks of the I don't know, the mileage that was put on him at Alabama. And he's just proven like, nah, man, I'm built like a Honda. That thing could go a million miles and I'm still going to be trucking along. I mean, this thing is, this guy is just just incredible. Unbelievable. He's had two consecutive years of 300 plus touches on the ground. Tell me the last running back you've heard of that had back-to-back years of 300 touches on the ground. He had 378 touches on the ground last year, Dallin. That's not today's football. That's old football. That's Earl Campbell, Walter Payton type stuff, where you could get that many touches and still put up 2,000 yards. Average 126 yards a game. He's averaging 124 yards a game this year. The guy is an absolute animal. And you're right. If it were to end today, is it a little spicy to say it? Sure. But give him, you know, 8 years in the league, 9 years in the league. Absolutely. Absolutely. This guy is a Hall of Famer right now.
Yeah. And, 6,700 career rushing yards for Derrick Henry right now. If he never played a down again.
And really 3.5 full seasons.
Right. And you know, you look at, I mean, I'll give you a name who's in the Hall of Fame. Terrell Davis, 7,600 career rushing yards.
Yeah.
Just 700 more than Henry. So,
but he had those years of dominance.
Different careers. And obviously, you know, you win a Super Bowl, that helps, you know, all that other stuff. But Derrick Henry has more career rushing touchdowns than Terrell Davis. And, you know, 1,000 less rushing yards. So,
but Terrell Davis had those years of dominance.
Exactly.
Just like Derrick
Henry
had.
So I'm just there may be a precedent there. And obviously Henry, you know, hopefully he gets to play for as long as he wants, you know, but, it's a great what if, and it's a great overreaction. I love it, Mitch.
Just not Frank Gorelong. That's
just
too
not
long.
Frank Gorelong.
It's
yeah.
Like, oh God, stop, please.
That's
stop.
When you've overstayed your welcome when someone's invited you over and it's 11:30 and you can tell they're trying to go to bed.
Yeah.
They've gotten into their comfy clothes and you still have refused to leave the house. Like that's where you're like, okay, please leave. Don't be like that. Speaking of guys who might need to leave soon, my final overreaction is that this is Pete Carroll's last season as the head coach of the Seahawks.
Ooh, okay.
This is it. And I've mentioned this when we discussed the Russ injury, when Russell Wilson hurt his little finger, that this seemed like the beginning of the end for this era of the Seahawks. And it has been a successful 10 years with Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, two Super Bowl appearances, one win. You know, they've been one of the most winningest teams over this stretch. They've brought this Seahawks fandom to another level, created a measure of consistency across the league, Hall of Fame players left and right. But if Russ gets back, his team's 3-7, 3-8, clearly out of the playoff picture. What's the motivation for him coming back and playing very much if his future is going to be somewhere else? And if his future is somewhere else, Pete Carroll, who, by the way, 70 years old, why is he going to be sticking around for a rebuild? He's not lasting the rebuild. He's not going to stick around through the rebuild. There's no way. So it seems like that would be the time for Pete Carroll to move on. 12 seasons in his 12th season with the Seattle Seahawks right now. 16 total in the NFL, obviously time with the Jets and with New England. But I just feel like this is sort of the beginning of the end for this era of the Seahawks. It makes sense for all parties to move on. It's probably time for Pete to hang it up at this age. It's time for Russ to, you know, find new pastures and create his own legacy somewhere else. And it's time for the Seahawks to retool this team and really assess where the roster's at and, you know, really kind of tear things down and build it back up. So I'm saying this now as the Seahawks sit here, 2-5 on the season. This is the last season of Pete Carroll in Seattle. Let's just enjoy it while it lasts. Cause I think it's going to be over soon.
Yeah, I know your parents are going to hate this, but this is that's facts.
They might actually love it. I don't know. It's not like things have been going great this season. It might be, you know, again, it might be good for everybody to just move on, you know. Sorry to see you go. Thanks for the memories, right?
I'm with you though. I mean, you've had quite the run in Seattle, right? You got the Super Bowl, multiple Super Bowl appearances. You've built a winning culture in Seattle. It's time to just start from the beginning, start over. And right off into the sunset while you can. It would suck for Pete Carroll at 70 years old to end with 2 years of being, you know, a 4 or 5 win team. You know, it would really suck for him to do that. Like, right off when you can. Okay, so you had the bad year. Russ was on his way out, and it was a good time to call it quits. You know, save face while you can. Get out there while you can. And enjoy a good retirement. And, you know, Pete Carroll, he's the oldest coach in the NFL other than Bill Belichick. The timing just seems right. If Russ is – well, and here's the question. If Russ is still there at the beginning of next year, do you think he hangs on for that last little bit of glory? I sure hope he doesn't. I sure hope that he just decides, hey, it's my time to go.
And I think they're tied at the hip in that regard, Mitch. Unless Russ is the future of Russell Wilson is in Seattle, then Pete Carroll is going to have to move on at some point. But to me, it seems like that's not the case. I think the future of Russell Wilson is somewhere else, whether it's this year or next year or 2 years from now. I don't think he's there for the rest of his career. So when that happens, I think is when Pete Carroll will move on. I just think that's probably going to be happening this year. Especially with the rumors last season. Pete Carroll in his 12 years with the Seattle Seahawks, 114 wins, 68 losses, one tie, won 62.6% of his games with the Seahawks. Has not had a losing season since 2012, went 7-9 in his first two seasons, winning seasons ever since. This could be the first losing season in 9 years for the Seahawks if they don't turn things around. So quite the perspective there for what has been one of the best teams in the NFL over this this last decade.
Yes, absolutely.
Mitch, that's going to do it for the NFL overreactions. We're going to take a break here, hit the mid-roll, and when we come back, we'll visit the world of college football with the campus tour, update you on the MLB postseason, and then wrap it up with our quick picks. So stick around and we'll be right back. Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening, but if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for? Welcome back to the Sports Hour with Mitchmo and Dallin. A little NFL talk, a little overreactions, but Dallin, it's time to get back in to our new favorite segment, the campus tour, the Sports Hour campus tour. Wild weekend in college football. Wild weekend.
Yeah, weird as always. This has been one of the stranger seasons. I think we've seen 48 teams ranked in the top 25 so far this season. 48 different teams have been ranked. That just goes to show the type of parity that we've seen in college football. And it continued last week. Let's look at the AP rankings, top 10 specifically. Not much change in the top five, except that Alabama jumps Oklahoma despite both teams winning. Now Oklahoma struggled with Kansas, finally pulled it off in Lawrence against the Jayhawks in the second quarter, Mitch, or at halftime. I don't remember exactly when. The Kansas Jayhawks tweeted out that it was free admission to the game because they were beating number 3 ranked Oklahoma and had like a half empty stadium. And so they put it out on the radio broadcast and on their social media channels that you could just show up to the game, fill up the stadium, because our team might be able to pull it off. They didn't. The stadium filled up a little more. It wasn't full all the way, but, you know, some people got a free half of football. But Oklahoma ends up winning, Alabama winning this weekend. But Bama jumps up to number 3, back up the rankings a bit as they continue to rise after the loss to Texas A&M a few weeks ago. So Georgia, Cincinnati, Alabama, Oklahoma, Ohio State, the top five, the next five, Michigan, Oregon, Michigan State, Iowa, back in the top 10 this week, and Ole Miss making an appearance in the top 10. That's three SEC teams in the top 10, Mitch, Georgia, Alabama, and now Ole Miss led by Matt Corral, just a single point away from being ninth. 10-35 is the points for Iowa, 10-34 for Ole Miss. So barely behind the Hawkeyes here, but it's been an impressive season for Ole Miss. They're going to have a top 25 matchup, a top 20 matchup this week, a chance for them to move up even further.
Yeah, feels good to be back on the top three. We're roll damn tied. And now we're just kind of banking on Georgia or Cincinnati losing one of these games coming up here, which is favorable for Cincinnati and favorable for Georgia. So we're going to have a tough time, I think, with that. But, you know, you look back at the Oklahoma game, it's a really tough look when you're up 10-0 at halftime and all of a sudden you make admission free. And then it fills up a little bit more, and you wind up getting blown out 35-13 in the second half. I mean, that's a tough look. It's very, and by the way, the stadium didn't even fill up that much. So it's very obvious that the Jayhawks love their basketball. They really couldn't give a shit about the football.
It's a basketball school. That's for sure.
But you know, still, you know, I
admirable effort.
And I don't even want to say this is a good win for Oklahoma because they're playing a bad team, and they got their ass handed to them in the first half. By the way, never wear those cream colored jerseys again. That sucks. That jersey stinks. And I think they've worn it twice, and they both played bad first halves each time that they wore those uniforms.
They're so cursed. Is that what you're saying?
Let's stay away from the cream colored jerseys. Let's just stick with the red and whites. But you know, Alabama gets their job done against Tennessee, a Tennessee team that is a kind of a tough 4-4 team.
Sure. A bad team. And listen, they gave it to them early. You know, Tennessee kind of put it on them early, but Bama, you know, responded and closed it out. So, you know, ultimately not like a super close game, but a feisty Vols, you know, team.
Yeah, very feisty Vols team.
Yeah.
I think game of the week, though, by far, was the nine overtime game, Illinois and seven ranked Penn State. What a wild finish to a game.
Yeah. You know, this is the first instance of the new overtime rule, right? So I think it's after seven overtimes, instead of playing the full possessions, it is just 2-point conversion after 2-point conversion. You line up one play, move across the field. They line up one play. If it's still tied, you do it again, and you just do that over and over again till the game ends. Now it ended in the ninth overtime in this case. It doesn't really, like, if you're going to do this, Mitch, why are we walking across the field and taking all this unnecessary time to run? Just fucking run the plays. What are we doing? Like, just let them
stay in
the
same end zone.
We can't do it in the same end zone. Like, what is this? Come on. Like, we're making this. Like, the idea of this overtime change is to shorten the overtime, not just the duration, but the amount of plays run in the overtime periods. Now, the amount of plays was obviously down because 2-point conversions it's one play per, but the time didn't go any quicker when you're, you know, having to walk them across the field, take a TV timeout, come back, do it again. It's like, this isn't helping. So, a fascinating game, fascinating turn of events as Penn State falls all the way down to 20th this week of the rankings. But just a weird one. Just a weird one. Nine overtimes. It's just wild to see it.
By the way, NFL, take notes, because like, this was exciting overtime football.
This is much better than the NFL. And it's not like, great, like, but it's much better than what the NFL does.
Oh, so it's so much better. You know what? Get a winner. Don't end in a tie. Get a winner. If
Let both offenses have a shot, you know?
Here's a great compromise. If you want to keep the one overtime system, that's fine. But if you're tied after overtime, go to the 2-point conversion rule.
Right.
You know, go to the one play, the one-off play.
Call it sudden death. You have one overtime period, and if it's not over by overtime, you go to sudden death and you 2-point conversion till somebody wins.
I've always hated that's fine. Ties. Always hated ties. Now I have to get over that with hockey because I know
listen,
that
you but, like, well, the hockey no ties in hockey anymore. But you know, much like our buddy Ted Lasso, you know, ties just they just feel icky, right? They just don't feel right. So
they do just feel icky.
You know? Yeah. So yeah, Alabama. You know, lucky for Alabama, Texas A&M has been able to continue to win since upsetting the Tide. It hasn't hurt Alabama's playoff chances. I mean, the fact that they're 7-1 and ranked ahead of an 8-0 Oklahoma team, a 7-0 Michigan team, a 7-0 Michigan State team. That's good for Bama. As long as Texas A&M keeps winning and Alabama keeps taking care of business, should be fine as far as their playoff chances go. Maybe, you know, unless they can beat Georgia in the SEC championship, maybe they're not the number one or number two seeds. That one loss might, you know, keep them in the three or four, but chances are still there. The other, you know, the other note this week, Mitch, and let's talk about this as we jump into games of the week. Big time top 10 matchup in the Big Ten this week. Michigan at Michigan State in Lansing. Spartans hosting the Wolverines. And Mitch, both these teams 7-0. The number 6 ranked Michigan, number 8 ranked Michigan State, respectively. 9 a.m. Pacific time kick on Fox, the early game. So wake up in the morning, make yourself a cup of coffee and sit down and go watch some Michigan football because this can be a great game. And this has huge playoff implications, Mitch, because the winner of this game is going to have a top 10 win on their resume and be undefeated on the season. There's no way that either Michigan or Michigan State doesn't win this game and immediately jump in the top 5, should arguably jump over Oklahoma, should arguably jump over Alabama. Could have a strong argument to be the third ranked team in the country when you get a win. So it's a big weekend for the Big Ten, and it's a big weekend for these two teams with a chance to really put a shiny object on their playoff resume.
Well, I don't like the jump over the Alabama. Yeah, thing, I mean, I think a jump over Ohio State, absolutely, because you're looking at now an undefeated team in the same conference. If you know, Michigan or Michigan State wins this game, now they're the undefeated team in that conference. Let's jump Ohio State. Forget Alabama and forget, you know, it, the one loss, I guess a one loss or Oklahoma hasn't really played too terribly. Of
Michigan
a
or Michigan State would have a better resume 8-0 than Oklahoma right now with the same record.
Absolutely.
With the win over one of those respective teams, a top 8 or 6 team in the country. Absolutely.
100%.
So
yeah, huge playoff implications. I think this jumps them into the top 4. Whoever wins this game, Michigan State would be the big boost. They jump up 4 spots there. So,
right.
You know, and even if Alabama jumped, you know, they could even jump Alabama and Alabama would slide down to 4. And I think that's a fair assessment there. So,
A fair assessment, says Mitch, huh?
Fair assessment.
Wow.
I think Alabama's the best one-loss team in the country.
I'm just kidding. I mean, they're ranked as such, and I would have to agree with you, considering how dominant they continue to be despite the 1 3-point loss to the Aggies. So, Mitch, another big-time Big Ten matchup. Not as sexy as 6 versus 8, but number 5 Ohio State and number 20 Penn State Buckeyes hosting the Nittany Lions. You know, we talked about Michigan, Michigan State jumping Ohio State. I still think they do, you know, in this matchup, but Ohio State has a chance against the top 20 team who did lose in 9 overtime, lost to Iowa a couple weeks ago, has really sort of lost their footing, especially that offense is just really struggling right now. So I don't know how good this Penn State team is. If Ohio State blows them out, I don't know how much it helps their case by any means, but still a big time matchup in the Big Ten that will have implications down the road. Ohio State needs to continue to win with that one loss to Oregon. As you mentioned, one of those Michigan teams is going to come out of this weekend with an undefeated record still and a top 10 win. So Ohio State needs to keep pace in that regard for the playoff and for the Big Ten. And they've got to take care of it versus Penn State. 4:30 Pacific time on ABC that game.
Yeah. I mean, it's really the big matchup for me between Sean Clifford and CJ Stroud. Like this is a huge matchup for them. Ohio State to me is a far superior team. I think Penn State is a farce. Don't like this team. Ohio State is the better football team. And to me, you know what? If whatever line is set for this game, I'm not even sure what the line is set, but just bet for Ohio State, because I think Penn State's coming off a really tough loss to a far superior Illinois team. And that, you know, Sean Clifford didn't look good in that game, and they're going to, you know, they're just going to ride that momentum, and or that, you know, they're not going to be able to catch any footing against a really tough Ohio State matchup. So give me Ohio State in this game by a landslide. I think this is the blowout, and this is what knocks Penn State out of the top 25.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough matchup for Penn State here. Mitch, SEC matchup, top 25. We just talked about Ole Miss. Hottie Toddy making it in the top 10, number 10. They will be traveling at number 18, Auburn, this week, 4 p.m. Pacific time on ESPN. Mitch, Auburn favored by 3 here. So basically a neutral site pick 'em in this contest. To me, this is Matt Corral. If you're that guy, if you're a first round NFL draft pick, if you want to be considered of these top prospects, you know, there are opportunities throughout the season to prove that. Here's one of those opportunities on the road against a ranked SEC opponent, your top 10 in the country. What do you have to say about it? I'm excited to see how Matt Corral and this Ole Miss team comes out here. So I'd expect them to win this game. I think they're the better team. I'm not really convinced on this Auburn team. Great run game. Tank Bigsby, fantastic running back. But Bo Nix, it's really up and down at quarterback. I'm not very confident in him, and obviously much more confident in what Matt Corral has shown this season. 15 touchdowns, no interceptions still for Matt Corral.
One interception. Yeah. But Matt Corral, yeah, he is this offense. He is this offense. If there's a lock, there's an underdog lock I can give, bet Ole Miss.
Yeah.
I love this Ole Miss team. Matt Corral, their leader in passing yards and in rushing yards. I just want to point that out too. 15 touchdowns, one interception through the air. He's got 474 and 9 touchdowns on the ground as well.
Wow.
So he is accounting for
Is that 24 total touchdowns? Crazy.
24 total touchdowns. I mean, this guy is just an absolute animal. Auburn going to be playing a very tough Ole Miss team. Love Ole Miss in this game.
Yeah, no doubt. Mitch, final matchup here. A good Mountain West matchup here. Fresno State, the Bulldogs, traveling to San Diego State. We'll be playing in Carson right now. San Diego State building a new stadium on campus in San Diego, but are playing at the soccer stadium where the Los Angeles Chargers plays their games in Carson, awaiting the building of SoFi. That's where the Aztecs have taken their home for the next couple seasons. So that'll be the matchup, 7:30 p.m. Pacific on CBS Sports Network. Mitch, this is one of the best defenses in the country, in this Aztec team, really in the run defense. And so it's going to be all on the shoulders of Jacob Hayner, quarterback for Fresno State. We mentioned Matt Corral being all offense for Ole Miss. That's what it's going to have to be for Fresno State on Saturday night with Hayner. He is, you know, a guy to watch in this NFL draft process. You know, he's not going to be a top pick. Might not even be a day one or two pick, but an intriguing prospect nonetheless. Has really played well this season, and you know, will be one of those guys where those Senior Bowl, you know, invite, the Shriner Bowl, all those sort of things, good opportunities for him to boost his stock. But a good test against that Aztec D.
Yeah, right now the line set San Diego State -1, so it's supposed to be a close game.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be a close game. Look for Jacob Hayner to absolutely light up through the year.
Okay.
I like Jacob Painter to light up the San Diego State defense, expose what their weaknesses actually are. Now, throughout the course of the year, they've actually been pretty good against the defense, but I think that Fresno has a dynamic enough pass offense to expose some stuff that San Diego State has struggled with. So give me Fresno State in this game, with Jacob Hayner leading the way.
Okay, Mitch, I like it. All right, to wrap up the campus tour here, let's go with the player to know before the NFL draft. To recap the players we've mentioned so far, Aiden Hutchinson, the edge from Michigan. Malik Willis, quarterback from Liberty. Last week, Kayvon Thibodeau, the presumed number one pick this coming NFL draft. And now, Mitch, perhaps wide receiver one in this draft class. Let's talk about Drake London, the wide receiver from USC. 6'5", 210 pounds. Been one of the guys who has really emerged on the scene this year in college football and in this draft process. Had the tools, expected to emerge. In the last couple seasons, USC has had such a deep room of wide receivers. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Michael Pittman Jr., Tyler Vaughns, Drake London sort of forced his way through last year as a sophomore, and even as a freshman saw time in a competitive room, and that really led the way to him emerging this season. Right now, 79 receptions, 1,003 yards, 5 touchdowns on the season for Drake London. That's in 7 games. He's second in all of college football in receptions and second in yards. Only 2 wide receivers in the country with over 1,000 yards in the season so far. Drake London, one of those guys. Mel Kiper put out his updated big board this last week, Mitch, and Drake London was his wide receiver one. Not just his wide receiver one, but the number 4 prospect on his big board. Only behind Kayvon Thibodeau, Derek Stingley, the cornerback from LSU, and Kyle Hamilton, safety Notre Dame. So you're going to start seeing his name more and more. Now, is he wide receiver one? Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, the wide receivers from Ohio State, may have something to say about that. Jahan Dotson, Penn State wide receiver, may have something to say about that. Treylon Burks from Arkansas has been another riser at wide receiver. So we'll see how it shakes out. But London has the size to be that contested catch guy. Great size, great athleticism. But what he's shown and just that reliability as a target makes him that next level prospect. If we're talking about top 10 prospect and wide receiver, we're talking about guys in the same mold as like Jamar Chase, Devontae Smith. That's a top-notch level player. So we'll see if he ends up that way. But right now, a guy rising up draft boards and a guy you're going to want to get familiar with. His tape is incredible. Watch any of his games. He has like 10 receptions, 200 yards every game. It's nuts. Drake London, name to watch before the NFL draft.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's got all the size in the world, all the athleticism in the world. Like you said, dude, watch any of his tapes. He's got 10 catches for 200 yards. Like, the guy's just a magnificent athlete. Let's also not forget, and you put him in those certain categories. I'm going to put him in the same category as Antonio Gates, Tony Gonzalez, those big athletic guys that can go up and get the ball. Like you said, physical jump ball type guys. Why? Because he's a dual sport athlete and he plays basketball at USC as well. So let's not forget the guy can get up and jump and he's got the height. So he might be one of those big red zone wide receivers you look for, like the Calvin Johnsons and the Julio Jones, those guys that you look for come draft time that can get up and go get the ball in the corner of the end zone. So a great, great guy to bring up down here because, you know, athleticism, tons of talent, really exciting player to be looking at.
Yeah, absolutely. Drake London, his PFF grade so far this season, 90.4 offense grade. That's third highest in all of college football. His receiving grade, 91.0. That is second in all of college football this season. And Mitch, this was a guy that I ran across, that I met at Pac-12 Media Day. Him and Keaton Slovis were the two players from USC. And I mean, Drake London was impressive physically, just his size, you know, 6'5". He's a very big frame. He's a big guy. Good guy as well. Good interview. So intriguing prospect. And like I said, you know, every season there's risers, guys who kind of emerge out of nowhere. There was expectations that London could emerge this season, but not to this level, not to wide receiver one in the draft class. So that's why he makes this list. Mitch, that's it for the campus tour. Let's talk about the MLB postseason. World Series going on right now. Game 2 of the World Series. Astros in the top of the 5th, up 5-1 over the Braves. Braves lead the series. Got game 1 last night. Lead the series 1-0. They're playing these games in Houston. Before we jump into the World Series, though, Mitch, I just want to kind of put a quick bow on the couple championships or the championship series that we just saw, the ALCS, NLCS. ALCS, Boston had the 2-1 lead, ultimately lose 4-2 in the series to the Astros. I picked the Astros to come out of the AL going into this postseason. Seemed like they were the most complete team all around. And that, you know, proved to be it. The bats for the Red Sox were strong as always. But ultimately, that was a team that just wasn't quite complete enough to get it done all across the board. Astros are that team. I think that's why they got through.
Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox bats were silenced in those last three games, only scoring 3 runs over the course of the last 3 games and getting shut out in game 6. The Astros pitching just absolutely took control. And that's something that you got to look for. You got to look for going into this World Series is the Astros bullpen and how much they can control the game once you get into the 6th inning on. Because if you're down any sort against the Astros from the 6th inning on and you got to face the bullpen, I think that's going to be a real serious issue for any team facing them.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, that was one of the things we talked about in that ALCS matchup was that, you know, the Red Sox relied so heavily on their bats to get them through not only that wild card game, but that series with the Rays. Could they keep that up and sustain that throughout the season, throughout the series against a good Astros pitching staff? Started off hot, faltered down the stretch, and ultimately that's why they didn't get through. Mitch, the Braves defeated my Dodgers in 6 games to advance to the World Series. Back-to-back NLCS matchups between Atlanta and LA. LA got the better of them last year, down 3-1, came back to win that series in 7. This time down 3-1, falling in 6 games. Mitch, this is a good Braves team, and this is a Braves team that's missing their best player and Ronald Acuna Jr. and some of their key players. And they have just found ways to win. It almost, you know, it feels like a team of destiny in that way, a team that's just figuring out how to win against all odds. And that's what they've been able to do. The pitching has been good, but not great. The hitting's been good, but not great. It's not like they've been stellar anywhere other than just winning games and getting through. And that's what I thought that Dodgers series really was missed opportunities by LA to seal games where the Braves took advantage. You know, a lot of close games in that series. It's not like one team just blew out the other, but just the Braves getting it done when they needed to. And now they find themselves in the playoffs for the first time since 1999. So great effort by Atlanta. We talked about this. They needed to take their lumps. They've taken their lumps. They've learned from it. And look at this team now in the World Series.
Well, you know, this is a team that I think has learned to win without their big pieces. They haven't had Ronald Acuna Jr. for a long time. You know, they have learned to win without their big piece. This is a team that's just resilient. They're scrappy. We've said that a couple years ago when we talked about maybe we're a little bit just too early on the Braves. Maybe we're just a little bit too early on them. And now they're here. This is a team that's resilient. They're scrappy. They're very sound defensively. They're sound on the pitching end. And shout out to Freddie Freeman, one of the good guys in baseball, finally getting to a World Series, 11 years with the team, and he finally gets there. You got to love to see a guy as likable as Freddie Freeman get into a World Series finally.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, a lot of great stories on that team, no doubt. And, it's great for them because they're going to play the most hated team in baseball in the Houston Astros, a team that nobody outside of the state of Houston, or not the state of Houston, the city of Houston, not even the state of Texas, not even the state of Texas. The city of Houston is the only place that wants the Astros to win. Everywhere else would love to see them fall. So if you're the Braves, you've got the whole country rooting for you. I'm sure as hell the biggest Braves fan for the next little bit here as they take on the cheating Astros, you know?
Isn't it funny how fan bases of everywhere have kind of pulled together just to be Braves fans for this World Series? And they're like, no, we want this Braves team to win the World Series.
Yep.
There's no like impartialness. There are fan bases of all types are pulling together to pull for the Braves to beat the Astros because, you know, fuck the Astros.
Exactly. Well, and the thing is if it was Dodgers Astros, it wouldn't be that way. because those are probably the two of the three most hated teams in the major leagues by the general fan base. So it would be like a lot of eye rolls, like, oh, damn, really? These are the two teams we got to watch. At least now there's that underdog team, that out of nowhere team that baseball fans can just be excited about and root for. And, you know, we'll see. Like we said, game two going on right now. They did get game one in Houston. They'll play games 3, 4, and 5 in Atlanta Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then next Tuesday, Wednesday, if necessary, games 6 and 7 in Houston. So, Mitch, just real quick, you know, we're early into this, but can the Braves pull this off, upset the Astros in the World Series? What's your prediction?
Absolutely, they can. Absolutely. I know they're down 5-1 right now. But this team is this is a team that, God, they just play so well together. They play so well together. It seems like they have every spot filled. They don't have to be a top tier guy at every spot, but they have every spot filled. A guy that goes in day in and day out and gets the job done. I want to mention Charlie Morton here, and he's the perfect example of go in and get the job done. This guy wears a liner off the leg at the beginning of, the third inning, maybe. Breaks the fibula in his leg. He goes, no, I'm going to finish this inning. He goes, he strikes out, lines out, then strikes out Jose Altuve to end the inning. That is the definition of a guy that goes in, gets his job done. He knows what his role is, gets the job done, and gets out of there. And the guy was, he's hurt. He broke his leg. He's got a broken leg. He goes, he finishes the inning, gets the job done. Charlie Morton is an American hero now because he just shut down the cheating Astros on a broken leg. That's fantastic baseball. That's fantastic history. That's fantastic everything about sports.
Yeah, it's a great story, and it's just another example of why it's so easy to root for the Braves in this World Series matchup. I saw the stat. Morton hit 95 miles per hour on his last pitch. 95 miles per hour on a broken leg after he threw like 20 pitches before that on a broken leg. Like, this is his last pitch, and he's able to muster enough power, enough energy, grit out enough to hit 95 on a fastball. Like, that is just incredible stuff. Mitch, you did not give me a score prediction though. Who's going to win the series?
Sorry. I got so tied up in Charlie Morton.
Yeah. You're
good. Give me the Braves in 7. Braves in 7. Yeah.
I am unfortunately going to pick Houston in 7. I picked them to go to the World Series and lose to the Dodgers. I just feel like they've been one of the most balanced teams in baseball. They're strong basically everywhere, and they've been here before. They fell to the Nationals, a team from the NL East that surprised everybody by getting to the World Series and winning it all. I just don't see that happening again. A team from the NL East surprising everybody and winning it all against Houston. So, unfortunately, give me the Houston Astros in 7 games. But I'm pulling for the Braves.
Doesn't sound like it.
Well,
doesn't sound like it when you pick the Astros.
It may be like a bit of reverse psychology here, Mitch. I can't talk about it too much because then it kind of jinx it. But, you know, suffice it to say, I'm not rooting for the Astros, okay?
Okay. All right.
Rooting for them. All right, Mitch. That's it for the MLB postseason. Let's wrap up this podcast here with our quick picks. We finally had some separation this week in the picks. Unfortunately, not good for me. Mitch is taking a 3-game lead in the picks. 61-30 on the season for Mitch Moe. 58-33 for myself. I went 5-8 last week, Mitch. I missed every game in the morning slate. Like all 7 games in the morning, I missed all of those. I got all of them wrong. I don't know how I did that. I'm actually kind of impressed I pulled that off. But 7-6 last week for you, 5-8 for me. So, you know, I've fallen a bit behind, but plenty of time to make it up. And I'm feeling confident going into this week.
As you should. You should always feel confident going into this week because it's a brand new week, clean slate. Let's get into it.
All right, Mitch, let's start with Thursday night football. The Green Bay Packers, Arizona Cardinals, two of the best teams in the NFC facing off on Thursday night. not going to be quite the game, I guess we would hope, right? I believe no Davante Adams in this game. No J.J. Watt in this game. Maybe no Lazard, I think. There might be a couple wide receivers missing for Green Bay. So it's, you know, it's still Aaron Rodgers, Kyler Murray. This Packers team is good. But I think the Davante Adams loss is really going to dampen my spirits on this game and my belief that Green Bay can get it done. I think Arizona at home, it should be a competitive game, feisty game, but give me the Cardinals. Continue to remain undefeated on the season. Extend that winning streak. Cardinals at home over the Packers on Thursday night.
Yeah, I got the Cardinals as well. Alan Lazard, Davante Adams, banged up, possibly not going to play, most likely not going to play. Even with the loss of the defensive people that they have in Arizona, I think that this is still Arizona's game to lose. Give me Arizona at home. Following that game, Carolina, they're leaving the city of Charlotte to head down to Hotlanta to take on the Atlanta Falcons. I got two words for you, Dallin. Keep pounding. I'm going to take the Panthers here to rebound and actually get a rebound win against the Atlanta Falcons.
I'm glad you're optimistic, Mitch, because I've hit the panic button. In Charlotte. Four straight losses. Sam Darnold looks like I'm seeing ghosts, like fucking Bruce Willis's son, you know. Like, that's what Sam Darnold's looking
like
right
now.
Hey,
you got AAF standout PJ Walker, though.
He didn't look very good either, Mitch.
I know he didn't.
That the Panthers felt it necessary to look into trading for a man with 22 accusations of sexual harassment just shows you the state of quarterbacks with the Carolina Panthers right now, that they considered for a second that Deshaun Watson, who might not play in the NFL for 2 years, would be a better option than what they have right now. I'm picking the Falcons to win this game, Mitch. And maybe it's a bit of like root against the Panthers or pick against the Panthers and the Panthers will win. Who knows? But I just like no McCaffrey and Chuba has not been the issue. The offensive line has not been good. Sam Darnold has just not been good. And the receivers are dropping passes. And Robbie Anderson has like 8 drops this year. And his last like 22 targets has like 8 drops. It's insane. The defense is good. This offense is horrendous. I can't buy into the Panthers right now, Mitch, unfortunately. So give me the Dirty Birds. I'm taking the Falcons. Feels gross. I hate the Falcons. This sucks, Mitch.
Yeah, that does suck.
But you know what? I'm hoping middling season turns into some Matt Corral, Malik Willis next year. Keep pounding. Keep the hopes up.
Keep pounding.
Oh, that's where we're at already. We were 3-0, and I thought they were going to make the playoffs. Oh, how the turntables. Mitch, a great AFC South matchup here. Tennessee traveling to Indianapolis to take on the Colts. Colts back to 3-4. Only 2 games back of the Titans. 5-2 so far in the seasons, but the Titans, they're looking really good right now. Back-to-back wins over, the 2 top teams from last season in the AFC and the Bills and the Chiefs. They're rolling. Colts get it done at home, Mitch. Carson Wentz, Colts maybe turning a corner. Couple wins under their belt. Gritty win on Sunday night, excuse me. Yeah, give me the Colts. Let's go. Back to 500.
I really wanted to pick the Colts in this one. Tough win in San Francisco, weather game. It was absolutely dumping buckets in San Francisco. They got that win 30-18 over the Niners. But Tennessee looks so good right now. They're looking really good. This looks like their division to lose. Give me Tennessee over Indianapolis. I'm going to call it a 1.5. It's going to be like a 10-point game.
Okay. Yeah, it should be a close game.
Yeah, it'll be a 10-point game. I'm not going to call a 2-score game definitively, but I'm going to call like a 1.5. So it'll be like a touchdown field goal. So, sure. Yeah, a close game, though, but give me Tennessee over Indianapolis.
I mean, line is Colts are only favored by 1 in this. Colts at home favored by 1, so it should be a tight game. I'd expect that.
Yeah.
I'd expect a tight game.
Very, very much so. Following that, Miami. They're leaving the state of Florida to head over to upstate New York to take on the Buffalo Bills. Give me the Bills. Bills are really, really good. They're my favorites out of the AFC, and Miami is having all sorts of issues. So I think the Bills here in a landslide.
Yeah, you know, Buffalo coming off the bye, disappointing loss Monday Night Football in Week 6. Chance to bounce back here, though, against the 1-6 Dolphins, who, as you mentioned, just things really not going well for them. They've got the rumors of, you know, trading their quarterback. I mean, how does that affect the team? It's just tough right now for Miami. Buffalo favored by 13.5, minus 13.5 in this game on the line. So, yeah, I'm with you, Mitch. Give me the Bills in this one. I'd be shocked if the Dolphins won this game.
Yeah.
I'd be shocked. That'd be absurd. So, Mitch, Cincinnati Bengals coming off a big win over the division rival Ravens, traveling to East Rutherford to take on Mike White and the New York Jets. Yeah, you heard that right. Zach Wilson. It's going to be out 2 to 4 weeks. The minor, what, PCL strain, MCL, something like that? One of the L's, one of the CL's. Not the bad one, but one of the minor ones. I don't know. Joe Burrow, Mike White. Give me the Bengals, Mitch. Who the hell would pick the Jets in this game? Are you crazy?
Honestly, this is probably the easiest pick of the week.
It was a no-brainer.
No-brainer, Bengals over Jets. I mean, Joe Burrow or Mike White? Are you kidding me?
Mitch, I think this just means that the Jets are actually going to win. It seems so obvious that the Jets are just going to somehow pull off a win. It's going to be nuts.
God, I hope not. But, you know, yeah, give me the Bengals over the Jets on the road in East Rutherford. Following that game, the Steelers, they're leaving the Steel City of Pittsburgh to head over to the greatest vacation destination in all of Ohio, the city of Cleveland, to take on the Cleveland Browns. Look, Baker's banged up. Odell's banged up. Jarvis is banged up. Donovan Peoples-Jones is banged up. Those are their top three receivers and their quarterback. Let alone the, you know, they still have the run offense and the defense. That's just standing fine and dandy. But I think that Cleveland actually loses this week to Pittsburgh. Give me Pittsburgh on the road in Cleveland.
Wow, Mitch. Okay, Steelers beat the Browns. That's interesting. You know, Baker right now, limited participant in practice today on Wednesday, said he was, quote, completely confident that he'll rejoin the lineup soon and then finish out the season. But he didn't say when. He just said soon. So, you know, he's seen a bit of practice time, but will he play? Is it going to be Case Keenum? I don't think it matters, Mitch. I think the Browns are going to win this game. I think the Browns are a better team. I think they'll rally. That defense, still very strong. We saw with the run game that apparently it doesn't matter who's back there. Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, you, me, Frank Gore. I mean, it doesn't really matter. They're going to be able to run the ball pretty well. So I think the Browns are going to be able to win an ugly game, control time of possession. It's not like Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers offense is anything to be afraid of. Browns can win this game 17-13 and just survive a week with the win, whether it's with a not 100% Baker or Case Keenum as the backup. So
I love how you lumped us in the same category as Frank Gore.
So, the rankings on that weren't necessarily true. Obviously, Frank Gore's ahead of us, and then I'm ahead of you. But you know, that's fine.
Oh no!
He'd be a great goal line back. You know, 1 yard carry. Just you know, carry those guys into the end zone, Mitch. I love it. Great AFC North matchup there, Mitch. There's two candidates for garbage game of the week.
Do you want to just do both of them?
Yeah, I love that. Let's give them both the treatment. So this year, Philadelphia Eagles traveling to Detroit to take on the Fighting Dan Campbells, the Detroit Lions. This year, one of our garbage games of the week.
This is just hot garbage. Straight hot garbage. You're a garbage person.
Mitch, Detroit's getting their first win of the season on Sunday.
Okay.
The Lions have been a surprisingly competitive 0-7 team. It's not like it's been completely awful. They've been close. in some games. They've been competitive for significant stretches of games. I loved the strategy coming out against the Rams, clear underdogs on the road against the Rams team, and they pulled out all the stops. Onside kick, multiple fake punts. I mean, they were up 10-0 in the blink of an eye. The Rams hadn't even touched the ball, and it was like, what is going on? Ultimately, the Rams, you know, do what they needed to do and win that game. Better team, but I respected that the Lions pulled out all the stops to try to get that win. I think this team is fairly competent. And ideally for them, they want to lose every game this year, Mitch. There's no motivation in winning anything this year. Get the good draft picks. You're building for the future, but you want to be at least competitive. And I will say that they've been able to do that this season so far. But at home, against a 2-5 Eagles team, it is time. It's time to get the monkey off the back. Dan Campbell gets the win. That press conference is going to be wild, Mitch, on Sunday after that win. He's going to cry. He's cried after loss. He's going to cry after the win. He's just like, it's going to be great. So, yeah, give me the Lions.
You know, as much as I love Motor City Dan Campbell coming out and trying to eat some kneecaps, this is not happening. I think that the Detroit Lions are by far and away the worst team in the NFL. Incompetent. It can't get anything done. I think they played the Rams tough only because Jared Goff was under center and he is the former Rams quarterback. I think there was some motivation there. But you know, I appreciate the creativity. You know, Dan Campbell, you know, he's getting creative now. I appreciate that.
Got to do what you got to do, you know, when you're down like that.
At least, you know, he's trying to win games. He's trying to win games.
And that's all. And again, that's all you want to see if you're a Lions fan, because you don't want to win games necessarily. Like you're ideally you win one or two games and you end up with the number 1, 2, 3 pick in the draft. So but at least look competitive. Right. At least you give a shit. You know.
You know, he's trying to win games. And I appreciate that about Dan Campbell, but they're not getting it done. Give me Philly on the road in Detroit. Probably a closer game, but you know, not anything spectacular. 25-13. Let's call that. I'm going to go with an odd score. 25-13.
Okay. All right.
I don't know if that score got me or not, but following that game, the Los Angeles Rams, they're leaving the city of Angels to head over to the Lone Star State to take on the Houston Texans. Other than Cincinnati over New England, over New York, easiest pick of the week. Give me the Rams over the Texans.
Yeah, 6-1 Rams, 1-6 Texans. I mean, we just talked about the Rams taking on Detroit, and man, what a nice stretch for the Rams here. Get Detroit and Houston back-to-back weeks. Not bad. Texans just traded Mark Ingram today, this afternoon, back to the New Orleans Saints. Brandon Cooks put out on Twitter, their wide receiver, locker room leader. This is bullshit. So apparently he's not happy about the way that the team is handling the roster. Could be more moves, more pieces being sold off in the coming week for the Texans. So team clearly trying to lose, looking to rebuild. Rams by a bajillion. I think that's safe to say. Mitch, your Bears, Dub Bears, coming off a bad loss against the Bucks, looking to right the ship against the San Francisco 49ers, who lost in a monsoon to the Colts on Sunday night. Niners on the road, favored by 4. Justin Fields had a tough week. Bears had a tough week. Not quite sure if it'll be Garoppolo. If Trey Lance could be healthy, will the Niners start Lance? Will it be Lance v. Fields? That would be fun. I'm going to take the Niners in this one, Mitch. I think the Niners are the better team. They lost to the Colts, but I don't think, I mean, that's just a weird game. That wet of a game, as many injuries as the Niners have had, like not much to take away from that for me. I think they're a good, not great team with the way that they're banged up right now, but enough to beat the Bears in what should be probably an ugly game. Sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
I feel bad.
The Bears have not given me any reason to believe in them. They're just that bad. But they play the 49ers at home and what's going to be an ugly game. And give me underdog lock of the week. Bears plus 4. Give me the Bears at home. Bear Don, you got to be crazy if you think I'm going to take my Bears. Bears at home, +4 over the 49ers. Take it. Take the lock. Take the lock.
Did you not watch the game last week, Mitch? Like, did you, you know, it's fine. It's, listen, you're always Mitch. It's good. It's fine. I get it. I get it.
I know. Whether I'm humorously consistent or not, I'm always consistent. So give me the Bears. That's a good lock. You know what? That's a good lock. Two struggling teams. Give me another lock. Give me a lock on a team that's struggling against another struggling team while they're at home and their dogs. Give me the Bears.
All right.
Following that game in Chicago, what's going to be a game of the week, by the way, that's going to be the best game you ever see. New England. They're leaving New England to head over to the City of Angels, take on the Los Angeles Chargers over in SoFi Stadium. Give me the Chargers. Love this Chargers team. Very competitive. Justin Herbert playing at an MVP level. You know, Bill Belichick's going to have a hell of a time trying to contain Justin Herbert in that offense. So, and that defense is exceptional. So, give me the Chargers at home.
Got the 3-4 Patriots coming off an absolute demantling of the New York Jets for the second time this year. When two of your three wins have come against the New York Jets, it just doesn't instill a lot of confidence, you know, in the team and how good the Patriots may be. Chargers 4-2. Coming off the bye. Favored by 5 at home. Give me the Patriots, Mitch. Give me the Patriots to pull off a weird win on the road. I don't know what it is. Mac Jones is not going to, it's going to be a defense. A few fluky things here and there. They get a win 21-19. Walk away thinking, how do the Patriots pull that off? Justin Herbert fumbled the ball twice. I don't know. It's going to be a weird one. I have a feeling the Patriots are going to pull this off, though. So give me the Pats.
All right.
I don't like it. Give me the Pats. Mitch, it's time for our second entry for Garbage Game of the Week. The Jacksonville Jaguars. They're leaving the swamps of Jacksonville, and they're headed to the Emerald City to take on the Seattle Seahawks in this week's second edition of the Garbage Game of the Week.
This is just hot garbage. Straight hot garbage. You're a garbage person.
Mitch. Trevor Lawrence versus Geno Smith. Seattle. They are just in a bad spot. They're in a bad spot. We sort of, you know, we saw that in that in that game against the Saints on Monday night. Just a weird team. I mean, the injuries are running back, obviously the injury quarterback, the offensive line has never been good. The defense is suspect. I don't know what to make of this Seattle team, Mitch. So give me the Jags. Give me Trevor Lawrence to go into Seattle and get his second win of his career, second win of the season for the Jags. And, you know, pull off a little bit of an upset. Seattle -3 at home here. Give me the Jags, though.
I like everything that you just said. Give me the Jags on the road.
All right.
Over the Seahawks. For all the same reasons. You just don't know what to make of the Seattle team. So they're confusing. And Jacksonville, at least you know what they are. And I think that they can get this done in Seattle. So give me the Jags. Following that game, Tampa Bay, they're leaving the state of Florida to head over to the Big Easy to take on the New Orleans Saints. Give me Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay in this one and a convincing 2-3 score win. They're by far and away the best team in the NFC South. I think they get this done in an NFC South matchup. So give me the Bucs.
Yeah, I have the Bucs in this one as well, Mitch. You know, the Saints ruined my prediction. I had it going through 7 weeks, right, that they would win – or 5 weeks, excuse me, win then lose consecutive games throughout the season. And 5 games in, I was right on, but then of course they had to win against the Seahawks and ruin that. But back to the losing for the Saints here against Tom Brady and the Bucks, and they just haven't played an impressive game to me since that week one, just weird win over the Packers where they just, I mean, Jameis threw the ball like 12 times and had 5 touchdown passes. Like since that game, they've just looked okay. And some of those okay games they've won and some of those okay games they've lost. So I don't know what to make of the Saints right now. They brought in Ingram. Michael Thomas could be back this week, maybe next week. So, I mean, that's a huge weapon to add. We'll see how he gets integrated into the offense. So maybe hope down the road for the Saints, but a loss this week at home to the Bucks. I am right there with you. Mitch, final afternoon game here. The Washington football team, 2-5, traveling to Denver to take on the 3-4 Denver Broncos. Mitch, give me Washington in this one. Taylor Heinicke and the Washington football team getting it done. You know, just sort of trying to stay competitive here in the NFC East. You know, they're 2.5 games back of the Cowboys right now. You know, 3 games in the win column, 4 games or 3.5, excuse me. So, they need to start getting some wins. And this, you know, against a Broncos team, who's not very good. They've lost 4 straight games. Washington needs to take advantage. Give me the football team on the road.
Yeah. Football team on the road in Mile High easily. Like you said, Taylor Heinicke, looking for a bounce back here. One of the more exciting underdog stories that we've seen in a while. With Taylor Heinicke, and I think he gets this done against the Denver Broncos. Sunday night football, the Dallas Cowboys are leaving Lone Star State to head up to Minnesota to take on the Minnesota Vikings. Give me the Cowboys on the road with future MVP Dak Prescott under center. Love the Cowboys here in this matchup. The Vikings have just been too hit or miss. And they've had weeks where they look really good and they've had weeks where they look really, really bad. And so they're really hard to trust, but the Cowboys have stayed consistently good. Give me the Cowboys on the road.
Yeah. Cowboys for, one loss this season came on Thursday in week 1, the very first game of the season where they lost to the defending champ Bucks 5-0 since Mitch heading into this Sunday night matchup. But give me the Vikings. Ooh. To get a win on Sunday night. I know I just gave you the case for Dak Prescott, future MVP of the NFL this season, but I think this might be a game where the Cowboys sort of overlook a team they're not super familiar with, not a divisional foe. You know, how many times you play in this Vikings team? Kirk Cousins, you like that? You're getting a little revenge from his old NFC East days with the Washington football team. Vikings, as you said, kind of, you know, inconsistent up and down, but on offense, I think they can put them up. And you're going to have to be able to put them up against the Cowboys to win, but I think they put them up and do enough to get the win over Dallas, Mitch. And that leads us to our final game of the week, Monday Night Football. The 2-5 New York Giants travel into Kansas City, get some good barbecue before they head home, and they'll be taking on the Kansas City Chiefs, 3-4. Despite the Chiefs being 3-4, Giants 2-5, Chiefs favored by 9.5 at home. Jeez. There's no way in hell I'm picking the Giants, right? Like, I mean, I watched that game against the Panthers. The Panthers played an awful game. And the Giants, credit to the win. Don't get me wrong. Daniel Jones played fantastic. The offense did what they needed to do. The defense, I mean, just stymied an awful Panthers offense. But Chiefs are in a rut. And they need to turn it around quick. And an embarrassing loss to the Titans, the recipe, the perfect thing just walked into town this week in the New York Giants. Getting a huge win over the Giants to bounce back, get back to 500. Just what the Chiefs needed, just what the doctor ordered. Give me Kansas City at home.
Exactly, just what the doctor ordered. The Kansas City Chiefs needed a game like this to bounce back. And I will take the Chiefs at home over the Giants. One of the easier picks, just feels like the perfect bounce back game for the Chiefs.
Absolutely. All right, Mitch, that's it for our quick picks. Again, Mitch up 3 in the quick picks on the season. So, you know, we'll see how this, this margin looks. Maybe I could close the gap a bit this week. I hope. We were different on quite a few picks this week, Mitch, a lot more than we usually are. So perhaps this will lead to, you know, some movement on the board. We will see, but that'll do it for the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you all listening. If you don't already, give us a follow on our social medias channels. The Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys, Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys, the TikTok at The Sports Hour Guys. Follow us on there as we drop content. You can follow me on Twitter as well at Little Thoint. Mitch, tell the folks about Anchor.
Anchor is the only place where you could be a part of the conversation with the Sports Hour. So go ahead and get on there. Leave us a voice message. Just be a part of the conversation. If you want to be a weekly contributor, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, you can go on there, be a weekly contributor to the Sports Hour. Go ahead and check us out on Anchor. You can go ahead and give us a listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. We will be there. Give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Tell us that we suck. Because, Dallin, that's the only way that we can get better.
That is the only way that we can get better, Mitch. And, you know, we like to keep the mindset like our good buddy, who I've already mentioned on the show once, but Ted Lasso, you know, he says, be a goldfish, right? We'll take right. your negative, you know, criticisms. We'll take it. We'll put it to heart. And you know what, Mitch? And then we'll be a goldfish. And that's we'll keep moving. We'll keep swimming. And that's what we're going to be doing here on the Sports Hour. So let's wrap it up. We appreciate you guys sticking around with us this week. Exciting times in the world of sports as we continue to break it all down here. Next week, it'll be NFL trade deadline, reacting to the moves for the past week. More to come in the NBA season and perhaps the finale of the MLB season. So until next time, we appreciate you listening. We love you, and we will catch you next week.
See ya.